Chapter 1. Pashat, the plain meaning of Exodus chapter 1. Unveiling, the Pashat of Exodus chapter 1. In the Hebraic tradition, the Pashat is the bedrock of understanding, the plain, surface meaning of the sacred text, as it would have spoken to its earliest hearers. For the ancient Israelites, a tribal people bound by covenant to Yahweh, shaped by the cycles of sowing and reaping, and attuned to the whispers of divine promise amid human struggle. Exodus chapter 1 was not merely a story. It was a living testament to their identity, their resilience, and their Elohika. This chapter aims to peel back the layers of time and tradition, immersing us in the world of the pre-exilic Israelites to hear Exodus chapter 1 as they did, a narrative of growth, oppression, and defiance woven into the fabric of Yahweh's eternal purposes. Exodus chapter 1, the opening of Shemot, names, marks a pivot from the intimate family tales of Genesis to the epic birth of a nation. It unfolds in three movements: Israel's multiplication in Egypt, chapter 1, verses 1 through 7. Israel's multiplication in Egypt, chapter 1, verse 1 through 7. The descendants of Jacob flourish, fulfilling Yahweh's covenantal promise. Pharaoh's oppression, chapter 1, verses 8 through 14. A new king enslaves the Israelites, fearing their strength. The midwife's resistance, chapter 1, verses 15 through 22. Two women defy Pharaoh's murderous decree, preserving life in reverence for Yahweh. Through the Pashat lens, these scenes reveal Yahweh's sovereignty, the endurance of his people, and the moral courage demanded by covenantal fidelity. This chapter will explore each section with exhaustive detail, weaving together historical context, linguistic richness, cultural insights, and theological depth to bring the text alive. Let us step into the dusty plains of Egypt, hear the cries of the oppressed, and witness the quiet heroism that sets the stage for liberation. Section 1. Israel's growth in Egypt. Exodus chapter 1-1 through 7. The text, a people take root. Exodus chapter 1 begins with a roll call of origins. These are the names of the sons of Israel who came to Egypt with Jacob, each with his household: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah; Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin; Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher. The total number of Jacob's descendants was 70 persons. Joseph was already in Egypt. Then Joseph died, and all his brothers, and all that generation. But the Israelites were fruitful, and multiplied greatly. They increased in numbers and became exceedingly numerous, so that the land was filled with them. A covenant unfolds. The Hebraic perspective. To the ancient Israelites, these verses were a bridge between past and present, a reminder of Yahweh's unbroken promise. The list of names, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, and their brothers, grounds the narrative in the tribal kinship that defined their society. Each name was a banner, a lineage, a thread in the tapestry of Israel's identity. For a people who traced their existence to the covenant with Abraham, this genealogy was no dry record. It was a declaration of belonging, a living echo of Yahweh's words, "I will make you a great nation." Genesis chapter 12, verse 2. The number 70 carried weight beyond arithmetic. In the Hebraic mind, 7 and its multiples symbolized completeness and divine order. Think of the 7 days of creation, Genesis chapter 1. 70 persons signified the fullness of Jacob's household, a microcosm of the nation to be. preserved and transplanted to Egypt under Yahweh's watchful eye. Joseph's prior presence in Egypt, followed by his death and that of his generation, marks a generational shift, yet the covenant endures. This continuity would have stirred the hearts of ancient listeners, affirming that Yahweh's promises outlast human frailty. Then comes the explosion of life. The Israelites were fruitful and multiplied greatly. This is no passive growth but a vibrant, divinely fueled expansion. For a people tied to the land, this language evoked the bounty of harvest, the swelling of flocks, the thriving of life under Yahweh's blessing. It fulfilled the primal command given at creation. Be fruitful and multiply, Genesis chapter 1 verse 28, and reaffirmed the specific pledge to Abraham. Your offspring will be like the stars of heaven, Genesis chapter 15 verse 5. In Egypt, a foreign soil, Israel's roots deepen, their branches spread, and the land itself seems to pulse with their presence. Linguistic riches, Hebrew terms that breathe life. The Hebrew text bursts with verbs that paint this growth in vivid strokes. Para, fruitful. A word rooted in fertility, it conjures images of ripened fields and newborn lambs. For ancient Israelites, fruitfulness was Yahweh's signature, a mark of his favor spilling over into human and natural realms alike. Rabbah, multiplied. This term amplifies para, suggesting growth that compounds, layer upon layer, until it defies containment. It's the promise of Abraham made flesh, a nation swelling beyond imagination. Sheretz, swarmed. A term of teeming abundance, used elsewhere for fish filling the seas, Genesis chapter 1 through 20. It casts Israel's increase as wild, organic, irrepressible, like locusts covering the earth, or stars crowding the night sky. Wayimaleu et haaretz, filled the land. This phrase mirrors creation's mandate, linking Israel's proliferation to Yahweh's cosmic design. The verb male, mole, to fill, evokes fullness, saturation, a land brimming with life. Together, these terms weave a picture of vitality that would have thrilled ancient hearers. Israel is not merely surviving in Egypt, they are thriving, a people in whom Yahweh's breath moves. Cultural echoes, identity in a foreign land. Egypt, or Mitzrayim, means narrow places in Hebrew, a name heavy with irony. This land of confinement, with its towering pyramids and rigid hierarchies, becomes the unlikely womb of Israel's growth. For ancient Israelites, this paradox spoke volumes. Yahweh's power knows no borders. He can bless his people in the heart of exile, turning a place of limitation into a crucible of abundance. The phrase, "the land was filled with them," hints at their future destiny, to fill and steward the promised land, as Adam was tasked to fill the earth, Genesis chapter 1 verse 28. Yet this growth also foreshadows tension. A people so numerous in a foreign realm could not remain unnoticed. Their identity as Yahweh's covenant-bearers sets them apart, a distinction that will soon ignite Pharaoh's fear. For ancient listeners, this section was both a celebration of divine favor and a harbinger of trials to come. Theological depth, Yahweh's silent sovereignty. Yahweh's name does not appear in these verses, yet his presence saturates the text. The Peshat reveals an El who works through natural processes, birth, growth, time, without fanfare. This silence is not absence but confidence. His promises, once spoken, unfold with unstoppable force. To ancient Israelites, this affirmed that Yahweh's will endures beyond human sight. A quiet assurance as they faced their own seasons of waiting and wondering. Section 2. Pharaoh's oppression. Exodus chapter 1 verses 8 through 14. The text: a shadow falls. The tone shifts abruptly. Now a new king arose over Egypt, who did not know Joseph. He said to his people, "Look, the Israelite people are more numerous and powerful than we are. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply, and in the event of war they join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land." So they appointed taskmasters over them to afflict them with hard labor. They built storage cities, Pithom and Ramses, for Pharaoh. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and spread, so that the Egyptians dreaded the Israelites. The Egyptians ruthlessly imposed upon the Israelites the labor of slaves. They made their lives bitter with hard labor in mortar and brick, and in all kinds of field work. Ruthlessly they made them work as slaves. A new king, a new threat, the Hebraic lens. For ancient Israelites, the new king who did not know Joseph signaled a break from the past. Joseph, the dreamer who rose to save Egypt, Genesis chapter 41, fades into memory, and with him, the favor his family once enjoyed. This king's ignorance, whether willful or historical, cast Israel as strangers anew, their growth now a perceived threat. His words, "more numerous and powerful than we are," unwittingly echo Yahweh's blessing, yet he twists it into a cause for dread. Pharaoh's response is calculated. "Let us deal shrewdly with them." The Hebrew nitchakma, implies cunning, a human attempt to outwit divine momentum. His fear of Israel multiplying, joining enemies, or escaping reveals a ruler obsessed with control, blind to the futility of resisting Yahweh's will. The enslavement that follows, taskmasters, hard labor, storage cities, transforms Israel from guests to captives, their strength bent to serve Egypt's grandeur. Linguistic layers, the weight of words. The Hebrew text drips with terms that convey both suffering and defiance. Avoda. Labor/service. A word rich with duality, it means both slavery and worship. Here, it marks Israel's forced service to Pharaoh, a perversion of the avoda they will later offer Yahweh at Sinai. Exodus chapter 3 verse 12. For ancient hearers, this contrast would have sharpened the stakes. Whose service will prevail? Marar. Made bitter. In Vayemareru et Chayehem. They made their lives bitter. This verb evokes a visceral anguish. Bitterness, tied to slavery's grind, foreshadows the bitter herbs of Passover. Exodus chapter 12, verse 8. A taste of affliction before redemption. Parech. Harsh labor. Translated ruthlessly, it suggests labor meant to crush spirit as much as body. The repetition. Ruthlessly, they made them work. Hammers home the cruelty. A deliberate assault on Israel's humanity. Pirtsa. Spread. Paired with multiplied, in the more they multiplied and spread. This term defies Pharaoh's intent. It paints Israel breaking through boundaries, like water breaching a dam. A quiet triumph amid oppression. Cultural resonance. Trial and triumph. The construction of Pithom and Ramses, likely granaries or fortresses, symbolizes Egypt's exploitation of Israel's labor. For ancient Israelites, these names might have conjured images of imposing structures, monuments to human pride built on their backs. Yet the text turns this suffering on its head. The more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and spread. This divine irony, oppression fueling growth, would have thrilled ancient listeners. It mirrors tales like Joseph's, where evil intent becomes Yahweh's tool. Genesis chapter 50 verse 20. The Egyptians dread, Vayakutsu mipnei bnei Yisrael. Vayukutsu mipnei bnei Yisrael. They dreaded the Israelites, reveals a power shift. Israel, though enslaved, looms large in the Egyptian psyche, their vitality, a silent rebuke to Pharaoh's control. For a people who knew oppression, this affirmed that Yahweh's favor could turn weakness into strength. Theological echoes, suffering's purpose. Yahweh remains unnamed here, yet his hand is unmistakable. The Peshat suggests that affliction, though brutal, is not the end. For ancient Israelites, suffering was a forge, shaping them for their covenantal calling. Deuteronomy chapter 8 verse 5. Pharaoh's cruelty, meant to diminish, instead amplifies Yahweh's promise. This prepares the ground for liberation, where Israel will trade the yoke of Egypt for the yoke of Yahweh. Section 3. The Midwives' Defiance. Exodus chapter 1 verses 15 to 22. The text, Courage in the Shadows. The chapter climaxes with a quiet rebellion. Then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the name of one was Shiphrah and the name of the other Puah, and he said, When you help the Hebrew women give birth, observe the birth stool. If it is a son, kill him, but if it is a daughter, she shall live. But the midwives feared Yahweh and did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them. They let the boys live. So the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and said to them, Why have you done this and let the boys live? The midwives said to Pharaoh, Because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women. They are vigorous and give birth before the midwife comes to them. So Yahweh dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very numerous. And because the midwives feared Yahweh, he established households for them. Then Pharaoh commanded all his people, Every son that is born to the Hebrews you shall throw into the Nile, but every daughter you shall let live. Defiance, born of faith, the Hebraic view. To ancient Israelites, Shiphrah and Puah were unsung heroes, their names meaning beauty and splendor, a poetic nod to their valor. Pharaoh's decree to kill male infants targets Israel's future, a genocidal strike at Yahweh's covenant. Yet these midwives, likely Hebrew themselves, stand as gatekeepers of life. Their fear of Yahweh, Yirah, Yirah, is not paralyzing terror, but a reverent awe that fuels defiance. In a culture where obedience to rulers was norm, their choice to prioritize Yahweh over Pharaoh was radical. Their excuse, the Hebrew women are vigorous. Shayo, chayot, lively, or like animals, is a masterful blend of truth and cunning. It deflects blame while subtly asserting Israel's vitality, a trait Pharaoh cannot suppress. For ancient listeners, this would have been a moment of pride. Their ancestors, even in bondage, outwitted tyranny with wisdom, linguistic nuances, words of life and legacy. Yira, Yiro, fear, awe. More than dread, it's a moral compass. The midwife's Yira aligns them with Yahweh's will, echoing Abraham's tested faith. Genesis chapter 22, verse 12. Hoya. Live. They let the boys live, pulses with the sanctity of life, a value etched into the Tanakh's core. Exodus chapter 20, verse 13. Each spared child is a victory for Yahweh.
Bait, bait, house, Yahweh's reward, he established households for them. Vayas lahem batim, vayas lahem batim, promises legacy.
A house in Hebrew often means dynasty, 2 Samuel chapter 7 verse 11, suggesting their faithfulness ripples through generations. Cultural power, life over death. The midwives embody the Hebraic ethic of choosing life, a theme woven into rituals like circumcision and laws protecting the vulnerable. Their defiance contrasts with Pharaoh's death cult, epitomized by the Nile Decree, a river of life turned executioner. For ancient Israelites, this story affirmed that small acts of courage could tip the scales of history, preserving the seed of redemption, for example, Moses. Pharaoh's escalation, ordering all male infants drowned, heightens the stakes, yet it underscores his impotence. The midwife's resistance has already sown hope, a spark that will blaze into deliverance. Theological light, Yahweh steps forward. Here, Yahweh's name breaks the silence, a beacon in the text. Yahweh dealt well with the midwives, and established households for them, reveal his intimate care. To ancient Israelites, this was proof that Yahweh sees the faithful, rewarding even the humble. The midwife's story foreshadows the Exodus, where human defiance aligns with divine deliverance. The Peshat's timeless voice, Exodus chapter 1 through the Peshat, is a symphony of promise, pain, and perseverance. Its movements, growth, oppression, resistance, unveil Yahweh's unshakable will, Israel's enduring spirit, and the power of covenantal loyalty, threads woven together. Promise fulfilled, Israel's multiplication honors Yahweh's word to Abraham, a nation born in exile. Irony triumphant. Pharaoh's chains fuel Israel's rise, proving human power bows to divine intent. Courage rewarded. The midwife's faith shields life, earning Yahweh's blessing. A foundation for the journey. For ancient Israelites, this chapter was their origin story, a mirror to their struggles and a map to their destiny. It roots their identity in Yahweh's covenant, tested in Egypt's furnace and poised for Sinai's heights. As the opening of our book, it invites us to linger in these verses, to feel the dust of Pithom, hear the midwife's whispered resolve, and marvel at an Elohim who turns confinement into abundance. What lies ahead? The birth of a deliverer, the clash of powers, the parting of waters, all flow from this seedbed. Exodus chapter 1 is not just a beginning, it's a revelation of Yahweh's heart, calling us to trust, resist, and hope. This is the end of chapter 1.